could do at level 1, and that's not too much. So in a sense, level 1 is rather simple. On the other hand, it's a challenging thing because you need to achieve factor of 1,000 rejection using these simple inputs. And these inputs are the hedronic calorimeter and electromagnetic calorimeter. They cover, the electromagnetic calorimeter covers repeated after 3, hedronic calorimeter covers repeated after 5. And this information is assembled through the consequent trigger levels until it reaches global calorimeter trigger, which finds jets and collects electrons and calculates global quantities such as missing T, missing HT as an option, HT, which is sum over the jets, and ST, which is equivalent of what Atlas is doing, sum over the calorimeter cells, and so forth. So
you mentioned electrons, but there's no tracking there.
Yeah, electrons and photons are the same. So at this point, electrons and photons are exactly the same. On the other hand, we also have a muon system, which covers repeated after 2.4, and it has three different detectors, so there's some redundancy in the trigger because these detectors actually overlap. And as you see, you find segments in these detectors, and you actually crosstalk between them, link between them, and you find the tracks.
This
and
is the dangerous part for a lot of this physics.
Well, some of it is, right. But this is the logic is rather hard to change. On the other hand, there are certain regions
right,
of the detector where you
segment
don't
finder, right? That's segment finder and track finder. Those two things there
right.
are,
so
as John says, where all the pitfalls lie for a lot of what we've been talking about.
That's right. And this is rather hard to change because the standard bread and butter muon triggers actually depend on the overlap. On the other hand, there's always things like the areas which are not really covered by Bose detectors. So you will have some acceptance where you don't really cross-check the segments found in one detector or another. And presumably some of the logic could be changed, but detailed iterations are required to see how this confirmation, which normally is a good thing, would work for finding looking topologies. Then the jets, photons, and muons are combined together by the global trigger, which could beat them against each other, say requiring N jets and M electrons, or look at the angular separation between jets, angular separation between electrons and jets, and do all kinds of topological stuff. And this whole thing then goes into the HOT, which is just commercial firm 1,000 processor, which runs stripped down version of reconstruction problems.
I mean, you could imagine putting in for these magnetically charged things or whatever, special segments and track finders that have patterns that would match that kind of track.
Yeah, the only problem is that you would mess up the standard track finder.
Wouldn't it just be an additional thing that you'd say yes to?
Well, in principle, it would be, but there's a latency issue, and there's issue of memory in the FPGA, so it might be not as simple as it
might
sounds.
Not,
right. But your best bet, if you can, avoid changing anything in this trigger, because this is a crucial part on which the entire experiment depends. If you mess something up,
but you can still do things like requiring anomalously large number of segments in the second station.
You probably could, right. So, but this needs detailed studies, and these studies, as Henry mentioned, are not very welcomed by the hardware people because they're very protective of their system, especially now when we are not running. So, no changes, I can guarantee you, will be done at level 1 before we actually commission the trigger with random biophysics. But this is something to keep in mind. So, one good thing about the one very good thing, actually, about the CMS trigger, that this is a completely digital device. There's no analog signal entering trigger anywhere. It's all digital information, which means that it could be emulated and not simulated exactly. There is no difference between running this trigger in software and running it in actual hardware, as long as your firmware is the same as your software. And we put significant effort in making sure that this is the case. So what we have now is complete image of this trigger in the software, which is called Level 1 Emulator, which we can use to test any cases, because in this emulator it's very easy to change anything you want between the segment finder.
Greg, does that buy you anything physics-wise?
Oh yeah, I think so. you remember how painful was running Trigger Simulator for D0.
Okay, but it doesn't buy you, it doesn't change the capabilities of the trigger. It, what it does is it changes the ability of the experimenter to, you know, test out a scenario.
Right, it minimizes the time you need to simulate the change in the trigger because you don't need to do dry run. You could
right.
do it just in your
no,
sandbox.
I think the difference, for example, between having ROIs and not having ROIs for this group is much more, you know, is a bigger deal than, say, that.
ROIs,
for Atlas versus CMS.
Yeah. CMS trigger also has regions of interest, but they come at the high level trigger, and these regions of interest mainly driven by time. So if you're rich and you can buy twice as many computers, you could increase the regions of interest by a factor of two. It's
okay,
really.
If he gets delayed another year, we can get faster products.
Thank you, Gordon. I shouldn't spend too much time on the screen. Okay, so let me now talk just very quickly on trigger design strategies. And there are two different, very different approaches. One is traditional, top-to-bottom design. You take a physics signal, you figure out the signature, you figure out the background, you beat one against the other, you design trigger to accept the signature and keep the background every day, then you calculate rates and efficiency. That's how many triggers for known particles, say top trigger, is being optimized, because everything is known about this. There is alternative bottom-up design of more speculative triggers. And the idea is that let's take some signature which has low background, and therefore it has a low rate. Then you can design the trigger to accept as much of this signature as you can, as long as you sustain the rate, and you try to find which physics signal this trigger would work. And then you calculate rates and efficiency. This has advantage of making a trigger which has a low rate, so it's easy to skim this trigger and analyze events coming from this trigger. Typical example of this trigger is E mu. E and mu has very low background and very low rate, so it's a good trigger. Now in this case, you can find dozens of physics signatures from Top to Suzy, which would fit this trigger. But you can design it really not based on the physics signature, but based on the idea that it's a low-rate final state. So there are pros and cons for this, both of these approaches, and I don't really want to go into all of these, but the bottom-up approach, generically looking for triggers which has simple objects, like EMU, which I mentioned, or HT trigger, the sum over the jet ET. You know that if you put HT high enough, you can make a rather low rate trigger, and is generally better than the trigger for 1 jet, 2 jet, 3 jet, and 4 jets, because this trigger would actually accept all of these cases. You don't have to have 5 triggers for different jet multiples to these different thresholds, because you get all of them from the HT. And in general, the pro is that you casting the net for a large variety of signal, possibly missed by the dedicated triggers. And it's largely model-dependent trigger. Let me give you an example. Say you have, as Kyle showed you, triggers for 1, 2, 3, and 4 jets. And the lowest trigger rate cut was, I don't know, 50 GeV for 4 jets. What if you have signature with 5 jets, each of which is 40 GeV? Well, that's a tough life, right? But the HT trigger would pick this signature the same day. It also would pick the signature with 10 jets or 10 GeV. Not necessarily 10, but 20 GeV. So that's just to show this idea of low rate and bottom-top approach. So here is the trigger table we used to show for physics TDR, which is not very old. It's only about a year old. But this trigger table is actually quite obsolete, although it resembles in its coverage the trigger table which Kyle showed for Atlas. You'll find the typical inclusive triggers for single objects, inclusive muons, inclusive electrons, for double objects, 2 electrons, 2 photons, and so forth, and then a bunch of jet triggers. You also try to identify tau's at the trigger level and djet at the trigger level. Now I'm not talking about level 1, I'm talking about the entire trigger, including HLT. And here is number of more interesting triggers. For example, jet plus missing ET is a nice trigger. But we also have the trigger which is HT plus missing ET, which is as good as jet trigger for some signatures, or maybe better as than the single jet trigger, because if you have five jets in this ADT, it's much easier for you to accumulate HD from this jet. So these are nice sort of workhorse triggers, and this is really the bottom-to-top approach. So you also have things like acoplanar jets, which is a nice trigger if you don't want to be swung by the two-jet background. We are capable of asking for two jets to have opening angle less than 120 or whatever your favorite number of degrees. And you could make more complicated requirements. We can say, ask for acoplanar jets and missing ET, or jet being not back-to-back with the missing ET background. All of this is possible. It's a very flexible system. And this actually is possible even at level 1. Of course, it's possible at the HRT. So what we did last year is actually we changed from this to a more sort of low luminosity running table. And that was the result of the so-called HOT exercise, which happened last May, and which actually is now available as LHCC document. So you could, it's an open access document. You can download from the Sorin document page. It was submitted to the LHCC, and you could get the idea what triggers we have. So without going in much detail, I just sort of show you the suites of triggers. This is electromagnetic trigger suite. These are the level 1 triggers. And you see that some of these thresholds don't really make any sense. The 8, 10, 12, 15 GB, you don't need this. This is just something when people just played around just to try different pre-scales and just to sort of construct realistically looking set of triggers. Then, then you combine level 1, you could also create different HOT triggers with different thresholds. For example, single electron or relaxed single electron. People here are worried about the isolation requirement, for example. Well, if you have a relaxed electron, isolation requirement is essentially removed. So this is good for searches for things which might have a lot of background activity around them. We also have photons. So for example, with electron, if you're afraid that the track close to the electron is somehow messed up by the particular new physics signal you're trying to look at, you could actually look at photons, which doesn't have a veto, in fact, because it doesn't really make any sense to remove electrons from photons. Electrons have much lower rate from photons. So essentially, photon triggers trigger where you ignore tracking. It's just like level 1 trigger, which also opens up a lot of possibilities in case when you have final signature. This is just to give you an example that number of different trigger objects we have is rather large, and this is a good news. Because the more you have, the more likely is that something will come in one of these objects. This is just typical trigger rate, and you see that asking for an electron or photon is actually a good thing because the rate drops very quickly. This is, for example, the rate for the isolated photons, and you see that rate really drops down at level 1 quite dramatically for the cuts which are very low, 15-20 GB. So that's a typical cut which we use. And here is some table of rates and so forth. Okay, so muon triggers, same picture. We have quite a lot of different triggers, single muons, double muons. At the HOT level, we have relaxed muon, which is muon with relaxed isolation requirement, and tight muon. Again, relaxed muon would be very important for searches for something which might be surrounded by extra activity. And again, the muon rate drops like a rock with muon PT, so we easily can have a trigger, this 7 GeV single muon trigger at low luminosity, and dimuon trigger could actually run as low as 3 GeV. The high luminosity is at 7 GeV. 3 GeV is pretty much penetration threshold for the muon to penetrate the calorimeter at which the muon chambers. Jet net triggers, we already talked about them. So there's a lot of triggers with HT, single jet triggers, double jet, triple, quad jet, and also triggers with missing ET at level 1. And at the high level trigger, you start mix and match them, say jet plus ET, two jet plus ET, two acoplanar jets, acoplanar jets plus ET, HT plus missing ET, and so forth. And we also want to extend this table by asking for HD and any other objects. For example, HD and electron, HD and two electrons, HD and a neuron. So that would allow us to, because every time you add a leptin, rate drops dramatically. So requiring a leptin would allow you to dramatically drop the HD requirement. And this would be a typical trigger we could use to look for these 50 GB resonances, which come with extra 400 GB around them.
The number on the right is prescaling?
The number on the right, no, it's not a prescaling, it's the prescale is the last column.
Yeah, yeah.
This is the threshold in GB.
So any one of them is an adequate level one trigger? Is that what you're saying?
For the startup, yeah, we are still, this is still work in progress. We are tuning them up. This was the first exercise when we were trying to put together realistic table, some 100 triggers, and the main goal was to demonstrate that we could fit in the time budget at the HOT, which is 40 milliseconds per event. And we actually achieved this goal, so that was a big success of the HOT exercise.
Greg, what's the high-level trigger?
It's also 1GF, which requires confirmation of level 1.
The threshold.
Let's see. Actually, it's easier to look at the rate. So these are, I apologize for the quality of this. I just ripped it out before this talk. So I cannot really tell you exactly, so let me read it here. For single jet, we have essentially unprescaled trigger at 100 GB at level 1. And turnaround is fairly fast in CMS, so this would be followed by something like 20 GB.
Well, there's a jet plus met line here.
Jet plus met line.
Right here.
Which one?
I can't read it. 50.
Oh, this one. Jet plus met would be.
If that's what you want.
180.85.
Inclusive.
Right. Inclusive jet trigger. Now that you ask, I have the query detail for you. So you'll be sorry to answer. Yeah, okay, so I'll just show you, this is the node I referred to, which has all the gory detail of the triggers, and you can just go at your time and see what are the triggers.
Right there, the ones with the prescale one.
Right, the one with the prescale one, these are tau's, so previous page would be single, like single jet.
There.
So jet,
150.
150, right, yeah. But it has very low rates, 0.07 rates, so you know it's, we can easily lower the threshold. The thresholds are really were put just to demonstrate that we can compile a reasonably looking menu, because it's not about the thresholds, at this point it was about the timing. Okay.
So if you wanted to go back to my thing that I want to keep harping on, just using a generic jet trigger at level one to pull things out, how low? Yeah, pull all these other things out. How long?
So as I said, you're probably talking about the order of 100 GB at 10 to the 32 luminosity, but at the 10 to the 34 luminosity, the lowest unprescaled trigger has about 300 GB at level 1, 350 GB in level, in HOT. Okay, so let me go quickly through the rest of this. So triggers with tau's, we put a lot of effort in being able to enhance jets, running jets with tau's. We have special tau triggers, single double tau triggers, and things like isolated electron plus tau, or muon plus tau, or tau plus missing ET. And you see that the rate actually is quite low. This is rate of 2 hertz at level 1. So if you require 2 tau's, you really easily fit in 5% of your bandwidth.
We're up in the lower.
But right. Right. This is an important thing. Now, this is this no-loss conjecture I told you about, and the idea is that you either have low-rate signal, low-mass signal, which has high rate and a lot of self-final state particles, or you have a high-mass signal, which has low rate and hard final state particle or large multiplicity particle. And the key observation is that offline, low-rate signal can be only found in low-rate background samples. If you have low-rate signal, which is completely dominated by the background, even if you trigger on this event, the possibility for you to uncover this signal is very, very small. Hence, it should be possible to design the trigger, this signal is clear of background, perhaps factor of 10 or 1,000 worse than offline, but still high enough so it will be a low-rate trigger. typical example would be heavy hits in 2E to mu or 4E or mu. So you design the trigger which has very low radius. You know that basically the only way for you to distinguish the signature from the dead round is to go high enough in hits there so that the rate is high and the dead round is low. On the other hand, high rate signal can be found even if the efficiency is low, because if you have a high rate, you could actually go for decay with low branching fraction. And typical example would be H to gamma gamma. For low mass hits, as everybody knows, H to gamma gamma, despite the fact that branching fraction is 10 to the minus 3, technically works better than H to BB bar, where branching fraction is nearly 100%. So the question is, can we get in this shell and armor race? When somebody designs a new model, should we design a new trigger, or can we get ahead in this game? And I think that yes, we could get ahead by designing generic feature triggers, like I showed you before, and using something which I call the last resort trigger. So what is common about new physics? There's few very general features which we could identify. It's either pair or single produced. It has relatively high S hat if it has to do with electric signature breaking. And to be produced in the collider, it must couple to gluon, quarks, N or WZ and photon. Now, if you are capable of discovering this new physics, it has to have prompt or cascade decays in the standard model particles. If it doesn't decay in the standard model particles, we cannot detect it. Cascades often are carried by intermediate vector bosons. Thus, we often expect leptons in the final state, perhaps with low branching fraction, but they will be there. Many of these couplings, are proportional to the mass, and therefore, many of the new physics scenarios prefer decays in the third generation. And both taus and v's decay with emission of electrons and muons, sizable fraction of the type. So even if you can attack these jets using the detached vertices, you should be able to see them in electronic channels.
Yeah, maybe I say this one is that they at least have to carry standard model quantum numbers like these non-perfect states.
Right. So generalized exotic triggers, you could go for high S hat. This would be high threshold single and die object triggers, HT triggers, which I talked about for high multiplicity, low energy decays, HT plus missing HT trigger for high multiplicity events with large fraction of invisible particles. General multiplicity trigger. If you see 15 jet in the event, you might as well trigger them, even though you don't have a theory wire trigger. Sphericity trigger. If you have an event which is unusually spherical, you might as well trigger it. You could go for semi-soft leptons from cascade decays, and this is whole set of dielectric triggers plus X. HT is a very good choice for X, because it's very easy for you to decrease the pressure on electron by requiring HT without actually asking for a particular object. You could go for the third generation, electronic tau plus X triggers, di tau plus X, hadronic tau triggers, and a suite of BTAC triggers, including, by the way, the muon tag trigger at level 1. B quarks is actually the ones which we can tag at level 1 using the semi-electronic decays. And I'll show you how the dedicated trigger works for that. Now, finally, so here is the B-tagging at level 1. You use the fact that B mesons often decay with emission of a muon, which is close to the rest of the fragmentation of the jet. And offline, you often can use the fact that the vertex is detached, or at HLT you can use this fact. But you can actually, at level 1, make rather efficient pre-selection of these type of jets, and this is the study done for realistic emulation of the trigger. For example, if you require 3.5 GeV muon, you have 7.5% B-tagging efficiency at level 1. This is actually half of what you potentially could get, because total fraction of semi-electronic decays of B, either from P or 2C, is only 20%. So if you talk as high as 3.5 GeV, you basically don't see cascade decays, you only see from decays, and that's 10%. So you require 7.5 out of 10% actually at level 1, and you decrease your QCD band now by some 200 times. So it's 10 times better, 20 times better signal to background ratio. So if you just require a VTEC, you could have so much lower thresholds for a single jet trigger. This is a single jet trigger, that's the question jet asks. So you could just read the array as a function of the jet count. This is 10 to the 32 luminosity. If you want to have, say, 100 kilohertz rate, you have to cut around 100. So that would kill completely level 1 bandwidth. This is kilohertz, because that's level 1 rate. That's hertz actually. Yes. So this is the level 1 rate without V-tagging. Once you include the V-tagging, the rate drops by a order of magnitude, more than order of magnitude. And you could easily survive with the rates of the order of 60 AGV. So even without requiring any other object. So that's a nice trigger, which is 8% efficient. If you have two VGS, that's 16% efficient. That's serious efficiency. Here is our example of going for the hidden valley models, and this is the work which was done by Mike Alvarez and Brown and Albert. And they looked at H going to AA, and each of these A, the vector particles goes, the axial particles goes to DV bar. So it's a 4D event, but the mass which was used in this case is close enough so that A lifetime, the mass is 50 GV, so there is not much energy in this decay. And on top of this, the A lifetime was put to some non-zero number. So it's not the particle which decays promptly, 70 picosecond. And they looked at how they could reconstruct this typical hidden valley model, which we just discussed, but this much shorter decay length, so two detached vertices. And the idea was, to answer the question, do we need any special trigger? So what they did, they just ripped these triggers from the menu I just showed to you, and they showed the efficiency at level 1 for these triggers. And you see that there is half a dozen triggers which have 25% efficiency at level 1 for this particular process. That's the good news. So how about the high-level trigger? Again, they found half a dozen triggers, which is 1-2 jet trigger, missing ET trigger, HT trigger, missing ET HT trigger, which all have efficiency of the order of 1.5-2% and very low, reasonably low background rate. So effectively, they could expect with this efficiency approximately 5 events per day accumulated at low luminosity without doing anything whatsoever, without tuning the triggers. That shows you that even this simple sort of strongman menu actually is rather powerful for detecting things which not necessarily very look at.
So Greg, I'm concerned, how much does that depend upon the lifetime of the A?
The next thing they're going to do is just scan the entire range of parameters. This was just one.
Well, should it get worse or better as the lifetime of the A gets...
Know that most of these triggers don't have VTEC. Only one of these triggers has actually VTEC. So this is one single jet trigger, so you don't care for a single jet trigger as long as you reach the calorimeter. Decay before you reach.
Can you please flip back to level 1?
Yeah. HT trigger is a good trigger. Just illustrating my point. Okay, so just last point. So what is if every generic trigger nevertheless did? And this is the idea which we're trying to incorporate, which I call the last resort trigger. What are the examples of the cases when dedicated trigger fail? For example, if jets come from small particle decays, they might lack tracking confirmation. And if you do tracking confirmation of HRT, you kill these events. Electrons and photons could have large impact parameters and result in funny cluster profile of the calorimeter. Again, your standard cuts would kill these events because they would think they're noisy electrons. Events could have mixed timing. For example, calorimeter timing and muon timing are different. Events could have abnormally high multiplicity of relatively soft objects. None of these object triggers, but when you do the partial reconstruction of the event, you notice something funny. Jet has 100 tracks pointing over it. Electron has a lot of tracks around it. VTEC jet might have extremely large impact parameter. Funny tracking pattern might be found on the roll is defined by this level 1 candidates found in the detector. And say every single level 1 trigger fires, but no HLT trigger fires. Well, you might as well keep this event just for the sake of its goodness. So what we could do is what I call the last resort trigger. each individual HOT trigger before failing the event would set a flag, which we call weirdness flag, which says that there was something funny in this event. I failed it, but you know, I'm really surprised I failed it. And you could, you know, think about this as just integer counting. And you could design how you put these flags. For example, it could be if you know, one of the cuts is failed in a very large margin, like 105 sigma, something like that, which you don't normally expect. Or if event, for example, has, you know, too many tracks or too many objects of certain kinds. So clearly we have to design how it will work. But then what we will try to do just before throwing this event in the garbage bin, we look at this weirdness flag from every trigger, and we will just sum this weirdness flag. And we just come up with the weirdness number of the event. And before you put this event in the garbage bin, you just say, if this event was so weird that I want to keep it just in case. And just the weirdness flag would be just defined to keep the very low output rate, much less than 1 hertz, for example. Then what you do, this is the trigger, which is early warning signal for any detector malfunction. If you start finding thousands of tracks or no tracks at all, something is probably wrong. So you would immediately see this trigger firing up. And, you know, that would be your early warning system. But then, since the rate is small, you just go and look at these events, and you would obviously, first thing, you would find a lot of detector malfunctions. But once in a while, when you fix the malfunctions, you actually might find the event which Matt likes, and then, you know, you will have to analyze this. It's not the panacea, but it's a great idea how we can expand the capability of the trigger just by looking for unexpected in the trigger. So finally, oops, that's not what I want to show. But so that's basically it. That's all I have to say.
So I think Michael Petskin has graciously volunteered.